Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
They asked me how I knew my true love was true.
Tony Williams, ladies and gentlemen. What a voice. Lead singer for the Platters. Classic song, right, Joan?
Whatever you say.
Joan Pride, senior editor for the Kiplinger Editors, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, Joan.
Hi there, Jim.
It's good to have you here.
Gee, thank you.
You love it when I play a little bit of late 50s music.
You know I do. You know, you just do it to drive me crazy.
That was before you were born, wasn't it, Joan?
I would think long before.
Long before. Many years before you were born, right?
Right.
Joan, give us the harmony report. From Washington, D.C. I mean, the 14...
Everything's wonderful. I mean, everything's okay.
It's like Thumper and Bambi up there, right? I understand now that the Republicans and Democrats get together every morning and hold hands and sing Kumbaya.
There you go. That's it. That's all you need to say.
and then we woke up, right?
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting summer, isn't it?
Well, I'm afraid so.
It's already pretty interesting.
What's the curse? May you live in interesting times?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And the only good thing, we say this every year, Congress leaves for about a month in August, and that's when the Republic is the safest.
That's exactly right. That's what I feel safe is when they leave for their Labor Day break, and they go out into the hinterlands, and they disband, so to speak. But anyway, I'm glad to know that everything is so harmonious there in Washington these days. What's going on with the economy? What's Kiplinger had to say about the economy? How's it doing?
Well, don't worry about the job slump in May, which got a lot of press. We're saying that economic growth is going to continue, and things are looking pretty good. Now, GDP growth will ease a little bit next year, but not a whole lot. We're saying it's going to be 3% instead of 3.5%. That doesn't bother me too much. I don't know about you.
Well, no, and especially since it was 4.4 last year, and now it's going to be 3.5. Looks like you guys keep reporting that, and I think you're right, 3.5 this year.
Oh, thank you.
And if it's 3% next year, it's sort of an easing trend that allows us to settle into. You know, if we could have 3% growth over the next several years, that'd be very healthy, especially, Joan, when you compare it to other industrialized economies.
That's right. No question about it.
Europe is right. as we'll talk about a little bit later on, you've got a great graph on page four, you know, some of the things that's happening in Europe. So really, 3% growth compared to the rest of the industrialized world is really a stellar record, isn't it?
Well, especially with what Europe has been going through lately, I think you can really see that.
Well, and also, you know, you might say, well, 3%'s not as good as I want, but, Joan, 3% growth with what you guys are calling moderate inflation and relatively low interest rates, that's not too bad, is it?
Right. You know, kind of everything is on an even keel, and it's so hard to keep, on the one hand, the economy from overheating or the economy from going into recession. This is almost sort of the nice in-between that you would want to have.
Right. And even though I said that interest rates are reasonable, you guys are saying that they're going to keep edging up a little bit, aren't they?
Well, yes, that's true. I think we say the prime rate will be, close to 7% by the end of the year.
Yeah.
So that is quite a bit of an increase. So things may get slower.
I disagree with that a little bit. I don't think it's going to go that high, but you guys are the real experts there. We'll have to see how that works out. But see, the bad news there for small business, Joan, is that seven and a quarter is prime, that means we're borrowing money in the 10 range.
Because
small businesses live, as you heard me say before, we live in the world of prime plus.
Yes.
Prime plus 1, 2, 3, 4, and the dreaded prime plus 5.
Yes.
Depending on, you know, the strength of our financial statements and our business model and the history of our business with the bank and all that kind of stuff, not too many small business owners borrow money at prime. So that's going to and if you think about that, Joan, if prime is at 7.25, if you guys are right, and we start having to borrow money in the 9 and 10, maybe even 11 range, and you understand that small businesses produce 50% over 50% of the non-farm GDP in the United States. That's an impact on the economy.
Well, that's true, but let's not get ahead of ourselves now. Things are going pretty well.
Well, they are. Yeah. What about housing?
Well, let's see. We're
froth,
saying
froth and housing. I've never seen those two, but together. Tell us about that.
We try to keep you on your toes.
That's
but,
right.
Well, of course, we've talked a lot about whether there is a housing bubble or not, and a bubble presumes that it's going to burst and create a lot of problems. But we're saying that the housing market will cool off without having a bubble burst. Which is actually good news.
Well, that is good news, but here's my question. Now, the actual quote, folks, says that these rising interest rates will actually take some of the froth off of housing. So now, are we looking for froth? Joan, what does froth look like in the housing? We need to know what that means.
I'd love to know. It's a lot of tiny little bubbles all pushed together.
Now, is the froth just before the bubble, or is the froth a good sign, meaning that we're not going to have a bubble? I need to know this.
Well, that's what I just told you.
Oh, okay.
You got to pay attention.
Okay, I'm sorry. All right.
That there's froth but not a bubble, and that we're taking the froth off, so there won't be a bubble.
All right, well, that's good. Let's talk about jobs. Now, you mentioned that the jobs are even though May's not too good, you guys point out, I think, here that employment should be up 2.2 million jobs this year. Joan, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Right. And now we say that 2006 job growth will be about 1.9 million, which is a little lower, but not a whole lot.
But that's 4 million jobs, Joan, in 2 years.
Right.
That's a lot.
6 million in 3 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Joan, now compare and contrast, Joan, that
yes, Jim.
To what's going on in Germany and France and Italy
yeah.
right now.
Yeah. They have a whole mess of problems right now.
Yeah.
Economic and political.
A lot. Because it's all tied together.
Right.
That's the thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, if you look at it, Joan, we have industries that have problems. We have
True.
Certain players in the industries
geographic
that
areas
have
may have problems.
Exactly. And but you know, if we lose a couple of airlines, we lose a car manufacturer. Sure, the economy will take a hit, but in a year or so we'll have that absorbed, and we'll be moving on.
Hopefully, yes.
The problems in Europe are systemic, aren't they? They're not. They're not just industry related. They're cultural related. They're societal issues. There's so many things over there. They can't fix those things like we can fix them over here. And I think
right.
that's the difference in our economies.
Stand
exactly. by. We're going to take a quick break. 20 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about national and global economy, and you guys point out that another factor in our growth actually dropping off a little bit is the sluggish global growth.
Right.
Which, as we know, and by the way, while we're at this, let's go ahead and talk about look at the chart over on page 4. Let's bring this all together,
okay.
if you want to, because if you look at that, I mean, you're talking about in 2005 and 2006, you look at Germany is looking at barely 1% growth in those 2 years. France
right.
is under 2%. Italy is looks like in 2005 is going to be negative, maybe sort of euro of near 1%, and the eurozone
yeah.
is barely at the 1.5%.
Yeah, and then look right. at us.
Yeah, and the next right next to it, we're like a bullet there, aren't we?
Right.
Great in 2005, off a little bit in 2006, but the thing is that has an impact on our economy, doesn't it?
The, well, the European exactly. Sure.
Influence.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys point out is the sluggishness of the European. John, what's going to happen to Europe over the next 25? I mean, how are they going to become competitive in the 21st century?
They have so many different problems. You know, they're trying to join together, and they're having trouble doing that. And you also, another problem that we haven't talked about is the whole Eastern European bloc that is actually probably more entrepreneurial than the Western part.
No question.
But they're also poorer and, having to struggle. You have Germany that's still trying to absorb and pull together, East and West. So there's a lot of different problems that are kind of long-standing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. And Joan, if it weren't for our experience with Japan over the last 15 years, it would be hard for me to imagine a long-term period of stagnation over there. It would, as Americans, we can't imagine being adrift that long. We fix things over here. 90 days, we may not like where we are in 90 days, but we're heading in another direction. We lop off the unproductive component and move on.
Right.
And take our hits and our lumps and go on. But because of what we've seen in Japan, where they've basically been in stagnation for the last 15 years, you can understand how that kind of thing could happen in Europe.
Oh, sure.
Over the next, maybe a generation. Because that's what we're doing. That's what's happening now in Japan, isn't it, John? I mean, we're getting to the point where Japan has been adrift for virtually a generation.
No question about it, yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see, and those are signs to watch for, folks. There's no question about it. And Joan, let's move over and over to page two and talk about jobs. Now, the news here that you guys report has to do with unions. Tell us what's going on.
That's right. Well, the AFL-CIO may not look like the AFL-CIO much longer. It's kind of splintering, and because the AFL-CIO was never one union; it was a membership of many unions, and that long-standing membership may be kind of crumbling at this point.
Why is that?
Well, they haven't had a lot of successes.
Mr. Sweeney's not doing his job. Is that what's wrong?
Well, that's what we're saying. The leadership of John Sweeney, that the heads of these other unions think that he's not doing enough to get union membership up. Not to defend him, but he's got a hard job there. I'm not sure how he does that.
Well, you're saying that the AFL-CIO will be off. And their membership by as much as 40%.
That's right.
Very soon.
Yeah.
And, Joan, so what it sounds like is every union for themselves kind of thing. And I think that may be what needs to happen in Europe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I were a small European country, especially one of the newer ones, I don't think I'd, as good an idea as the Eurozone is in terms of trade, I'm not sure that I think maybe they need to look at what's happened with AFL-CIO and see that maybe larger wasn't better. And that's what.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because it took them so many generations to come to the point to decide to band together. And now, as soon as they band together, they're starting to splinter. I'm talking about Europe. So
right,
it's interesting that you would make the analogy there.
Well, and the thing is, Joan, is that this is all part of – see, I see this as a trend globally in every part of society, and that is smaller, quicker, more efficient.
Yeah.
And that's what I meant when I said years ago, the century of the entrepreneur.
Yes.
And see, I define entrepreneur not just as a small company that's owned by an individual or a family. Entrepreneur is anybody or any organization or even an employee that can think nimbly, that can perform their tasks efficiently and not be tied to a bunch of baggage and unproductive stuff.
Right.
And it sounds like that's what the unions are saying about the AFL-CIO.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. Sure.
And I think that's what I think that's the problem that the Eastern Europeans are going to run into. It's not going to take much, Joan, for them to start becoming less poor, and start saying, you know what, it's not worth it to being tied to France or Italy.
Yes.
Because, one of the most entrepreneurial, in the recent GEM report, the Global Entrepreneurial Monitor, Joan, I forget which one it was, but one of the Eastern European bloc, one of the Soviet bloc countries was the most entrepreneurial of all countries. They even beat the United States in terms of entrepreneurship. That was one of those Eastern bloc countries. Stand by, quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about markets and, we're going to talk about energy. What kind of gas prices are you going to be paying real soon? Stay with
me. He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with us today. It's good to be with you. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Price got a website, don't you, Joan?
We sure do. www.kiplinger.com.
KIPLINGER. I hope you check it out, folks, because a lot of good free stuff there. But they also have stuff you can subscribe to, like this Kiplinger letter that's now in its 82nd year, I think.
It's way up there, let's say that.
Yeah, 23, so 23 from 05, I think that's 83 years, and 82 years, and soon to be 83. And that's the weekly letter, the Kiplinger letter, that Joan and I work off of every week. And then there are three biweekly letters, aren't there, Joan?
That's right. We've got the Kiplinger Agriculture letter, Kiplinger Tax letter, which I work for, and the Kiplinger California letter.
And those are come out every other week. And then there's also a magazine, the Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine.
Exactly.
And you can get that at the newsstands as well, folks. But if you'll subscribe, they'll give you a 30-day free trial so you can road test them and see what you think. I hope you'll check those out because they're good stuff. I've known about Kiplinger for a long time. I remember, Joan, 30-something years ago when I was only two, going into offices and seeing the Kiplinger letter laying on the desks of managers and executives.
Wow!
How about that? Long,
pretty
long
good.
Time ago. Yeah. Well, it's just.
You're dating yourself.
Well, I know. Of course, I was only two though in those days, Joan.
Uh huh.
Joan, what's the story on gas prices? Have you got any good news for us?
Well, let's see. We're saying that they'll be the lowest during the peak summer driving season.
How could that be?
Which I know,
that's
the opposite of the usual pattern. That's what we're saying. Well, we're saying that prices were so high this winter that they're will end up coming, pulling back a little bit from those highs. Although we do admit that there are going to be some spikes in some regions.
So the good news, the good news is that prices are going to be lower in the summer, but only because we had the bad news that they were so ridiculously high already in the earlier in the year.
Well, yeah.
So
sorry.
Anyway, it's interesting to see.
It's all relative, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. But there are a lot of SUVs on the parking lots. I mean, on the car lots out there that are looking to be sold, and a lot of increased interest in the hybrids, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's waiting lists for them now, most of them.
And the companies, does it surprise you that they can't crank those things out any faster?
Oh, absolutely.
Wouldn't you think that they could crank those out? I don't know, man. I guess I don't understand how cars are.
Don't you want to take my money? Come on.
That's right. Joan, I want to come back to one thing. I accidentally skipped over one thing I want to come back to, and that is something that the Army is doing to marry up their recruiting and employers. Tell us, have you got some thoughts on that? This says basically the Army is looking for a few good employers and they want to beef up troop strength by agreeing to hire recruits, get companies to hire recruits once their tour of duty is over. So are they training these people for jobs that the employers can use? What's going on?
Right, and that's interesting because that means that you will get a well-trained person. Now, of course, they're not going to be training them in everything. It will only be certain areas. But if you want to know what areas those are, you should go to www.armypays.com. And I guess basically the military is pulling out all the stops because they really need more people, and they're just having trouble filling those slots.
Well, this is very smart. And see, this is something you and I've reported on in the past, Joan, that local companies and chambers of commerce and school systems have been working on all over the country, and that's to make sure that the people coming out of the local high schools had at least the kinds of skills that the local employers needed.
Right.
So this is very similar to that, isn't it?
Well, the skills gap has been a problem for many years.
Well, that's right. And Joan, one of the top three concerns of small businesses right now, based on the surveys that we report on this show,
right,
is not finding people to work, but finding qualified people to work.
Right.
That's one of the biggies right
Big
there.
Big difference, yeah.
Yep. Joan, we're going to take a break in a second, but before we do, the almost year-long hockey lockout is about to end.
Believe it or not.
And I want to talk about that when we come back just a little bit, because I don't want to talk so much about hockey as I want to talk about hockey customers and what was wrong with that picture. Stay with us. 20 till. We'll be right back with Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, bottom of page 2, you've got a section here on sports, but basically it's talking about the hockey season. The recently demised hockey season. And tell us, do you know the story about this? You know what happened with the hockey, the pro hockey
season?
Well,
I mean, there was a labor dispute.
Yeah, there was a labor dispute. You could call it that. And this is where basically, I don't know, did the hockey players strike or did the owners lock them out or what happened?
I thought the first thing that happened was that they got locked out, but I don't know.
Okay, but the bottom line is the entire hockey season basically for 2004-2005 ended, right?
Did it even start? I don't think it ever started.
Right, it never happened.
Right.
And so here's my question. You know, I said this about the baseball players 10 years ago. What part of the fans do you not get? You know, what part of the people who pay your bills, all this money you're arguing over?
Yep.
That you want more of, or you
where
don't want to pay as
from?
Much of. Where does that money come from? And if you know, while you guys are being greedy and stupid, basically.
Yep.
All these your fans are going somewhere else. And you know what's interesting about hockey? There's lots of hockey people can watch that isn't on the pro level. That's pretty darn good hockey. That's what my friends in Canada tell me.
Oh, yeah?
In the northern states, they tell me that they just go watch semi-pro or they go play themselves.
Ooh.
So, you know, this is an important lesson. Apparently, Joan, a lot of the sports, the various sports, don't get it. They don't get who pays the bills, do they?
Well, I remember the baseball strike a few years ago. Yeah. I thought baseball was going to die. Things were so bad.
And you know what? I haven't been able to watch baseball since.
A lot of people feel that way.
Not to any degree. I mean, I still haven't forgiven them for that.
Yeah.
I really haven't. And I watch the World Series some, but I don't get into it anymore.
Yeah.
And the same thing has happened with hockey. And you know what? They deserve what they get because they brought it on themselves. Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk about the courts. What's the news there in the courts?
All right, on page 3. Well, what we're saying is, you know, don't expect the recent kissing and making up in the Senate to really last
the Kumbaya
a whole long
episode.
Time. Yeah. Well, we do say that Bush will come out ahead in the end, and we're saying that 40% of the federal judges now sitting have been appointed or will have been appointed by Bush by the time he leaves office in 2009.
That is a statistic.
Which is a staggering number.
If you see... I love this. 40% by Bush, plus another 20% by other Republicans, by either his father or Ronald Reagan or Gerald Ford.
Right.
By the time he leaves office, about 60% will have been appointed. And these are lifetime appointments, too, aren't they?
I don't know.
The ones you're talking
about,
I think, are the lifetime ones. But, Joan, if you see Ted Kennedy and Dick Durbin walking around with their veins popping out on their forehead, they've just thought about this statistic.
You're such a sore winner.
That's so funny. But something happened this week, right? I mean, Ms. Brown from California was confirmed, right?
That's right, and I believe the Senate has gotten cloture, meaning they've ended extended debate on the other lady, I think Ms. Rogers.
Right, out of Texas.
Right, right.
Ms. Brown is an African-American female from California
right.
that's recently, and I think it went through 56-43. And then the seven Democrats didn't say they'd vote for her. They just said that they wouldn't filibuster her, right?
Right.
And same thing with Ms. Rogers, and the same thing with the gentleman from Alabama.
Right.
And so that's going to be three probably pretty soon, but they're still holding out on Mr. Bolton, aren't they? The UN ambassador.
Right. Well, and again, that's not a judicial appointment and was not covered by this little agreement that they
right,
made.
Right. 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 But that's still. But there was some something implied though, Joan, that
there
was going to be a new kind of harmony going on. You know.
I didn't get that at all.
You didn't. Maybe I was hoping, Joan.
I think you're being a little too optimistic. I think maybe
I'm being a little Pollyanna here,
yeah.
I apologize for that.
Joan,
let me ask you this question. I need a prediction from you here. How long do you think it will take the Senate, the Democrats primarily in this case, because they're in the minority, how long will it take them to filibuster the first judicial nominee? When will that happen?
Well... I don't know that we have anybody coming up right now that's going to be a problem. It sounds to me as if other appointees, particularly Mr. Bolton, are the big problem right now.
Right. Well, but they've got these three that they basically agreed to accept.
Right.
But there are plenty of others coming along right behind them.
Right. And the agreement said the agreement said they wouldn't filibuster other appointments except in extraordinary circumstances.
I'm going to say it's going to happen before they break for Labor Day.
Ooh, so that means before
this
August.
This summer, yeah.
Ooh.
I think there'll be something this summer.
Okay, well, I'll take this fall then.
Okay, you're going to go to the fall? All right.
Yeah, I'll go to the fall.
Let's move on down and talk about technology, Joan. The government is getting involved in spyware, aren't they?
Well, that's right. Well, they want to put a dent in spyware.
Right, right.
They want to go after it.
And, of course, spyware. Tell
us what they need to do.
You want to tell us what spyware is? You want me to?
Oh, I'll let you do that.
Spyware, folks, is literally programs that get installed on your computer that basically, you know, take over your computer. It's like getting a little parasite in your computer, and it can do lots of different things. And you get it by going to websites and or downloading stuff from websites that are owned by people who are willing to give you spyware. But you can avoid it if you have security technology on your computer, like I do. And like I'm sure Joan does. So check it out, folks. But the government is going, and that's what Joan's going to talk to us about when we come back, about what the government is doing about that. We'll do that right after these messages. It's 10 Till. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Lessingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about spyware. And I just described a little bit about what spyware is, and folks, if you're going along, surfing along, and all of a sudden a little advertisement pops up, and it's not a pop up from the website that you are on. It's unrelated to that. You probably got a little spyware on your computer.
Wow.
And it could get worse. It could be uglier. I mean, it could get really ugly. And so you want to make sure that you're protected by going to one of the security companies, McAfee or Norton or some of those guys, and make sure you've got that kind of anti-spyware capability. Because the more we surf around, Joan, and the more we try to use our computers as tools, you're going to find yourself from time to time in a place that you didn't, you know, you're going to wander down a dark alley and pick up something like this potentially. And so you got to be protected. I know I am. I know you are. But what's the government planning to do about helping us out with this, Joan?
Well, again, Congress is going to try to pass legislation that will block this, outlawing spyware and allowing for jail time and large fines for people that they catch. The problem is they got to catch them.
That's right. And some of these people are not even in the, most of them probably are not even in the United States.
Right.
They're on some island somewhere, or they're in some foreign country where we can't get to them. But at least they're making it against the law for folks to do that. But the problem, Joan, we had one of our tech experts was on earlier in the week, and what he was saying is that from an enforcement standpoint, the people who have to really spend their are having to spend the money to fight these people are the ones who have the biggest vested interest. Companies like Microsoft and AOL and some of those folks, because the governments, the state and the federal government, doesn't have the funds to fight these people.
That's right.
And so it's and the thing is, Joan, we all have to be part of this, don't we? We all have to be smarter consumers on the internet. We have to make sure that we know who we're doing business with, and there are ways of finding that out. Check out to make sure that anytime you do business with anybody online, that you feel like they're a good merchant, on a good online merchant. And Joan, one of the big things, and if I could just take another half a minute on this, I reported this earlier this week and earlier in the day, and that is the increase in phishing. You know what phishing is, right?
It's not casting your line, right?
That's right. PH, well, they're casting a line for us, the bad guys, phishing. And this is where, Joan, they would do something like send me a letter, an email from Kiplinger, for example. I have never seen one like that, but they might send one from Kiplinger and say, you know, Jim, you're a subscriber to Kiplinger. We need to update your account. Please give us your information. And I might think it was from Kiplinger. I've gotten them from PayPal. I've gotten them from eBay.
I got something that looked like it was from my own company telling me that.
Exactly. They're very sharp. Here's the thing to remember, Joan. Never, 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 never answer one of those things. Don't click on the link. Don't go there. Don't give them any information. Not even your email. Don't even go there. Is there any part about never that you don't understand?
Right.
Because, Joan, people who are good companies don't ask you for that information by email.
Yep.
They do not do it. Even if they ever wanted to, they know they can't do it now.
That's right.
So, folks, never, please never do that. Joan, let's move down and talk about green buildings. And these are buildings that are very efficient from an energy standpoint, aren't they?
Well, they sure are.
They're not just painted green, right?
And in the short run, they raise your construction costs. But in the long run, they save you on energy costs, which is a very good thing.
Right. But the construction costs initially, you guys point out, could be as much as 20%.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a good bit.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to really be in it for the long run, and you've got to be able to. What you're going to have to be able to do is really track your utility bills and make sure that you're getting the payback on those things.
That's right.
So, but that's another thing that we're all going to have to be doing, not only for our commercial buildings but our homes as well.
Exactly.
Joan, the IRS, we only got about a half a minute, but the IRS wants to end the abuse of S corporations. You're the tax expert. What's the story on that?
Well, these are one-owner S corporations that don't pay any payroll taxes because they don't draw a salary.
Right.
And I guess Congress is concerned that there may be some hanky-panky going on, so they're clamping down on that.
Well, I think they shouldn't do that. I think if you want to be an S corp, and a small operator with an S corp, you ought to be able to do whatever you want to do. It's part of the benefits that small business owners get, Joan, and I'm against this myself.
Right.
Anyway, thank you, Joan, for being here. Good job.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.